and based author Stephen King delivered the commencement address at the University of Maine at Orono, which is just a few miles up the road from the home in Bangor. This is part of what he said. I wonder if you've considered the larger implications of this. I mean, I'm honored, I'm delighted, I'm flattered out of my shoes. But think of it. You have asked a man who has spent the last 30 years trying to scare the hell out of everybody in the English language world to send you out into the world. I think I'll take that as a compliment. Well, when it comes to my literary taste, Stephen King has the distinction of being a writer whom I greatly admire as a human being, but whose work I just can't seem to get into. I've never met him. He gives every impression of being a very pleasant and charming guy. He offers a lot of encouragement to aspiring writers. He's gotten a lot of people probably to do some dedicated reading that they wouldn't have otherwise done. He's also done some wonderfully philanthropic things for his hometown of Bangor. And on top of all that, he's a diehard Red Sox fan. So what's not to like about him? You're absolutely nothing. As I say, I just can't quite get into his stuff. I don't do horror books or movies or any of those kinds of things. There are a couple of exceptions, though. For the Red Sox angle it had, I did get a kick out of The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. And his book, Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, was made into what I consider to be one of the better movies that have come out over the past 15 to 20 years. The movie was just titled The Shawshank Redemption. I'm going to use it as my lead-in for today's sermon. It's a very detailed and complex movie with a lot of subtle and not-so-subtle religious overtones and undertones. I could probably devote a sermon series to this movie if I wanted to, but I'm just going to give it a quick hit as a way of getting at this larger topic of redemption. In the book and the movie, the main character is Andy Dufresne. The movie, he's played by Tom Robbins. And he is sent to the Maine State Penitentiary, also called the Shawshank Penitentiary, in the book and the movie. It's patterned somewhat after the Maine State Prison up in Thomaston, which is where the store was next to where I got the chalice to see how this all comes together. Well, anyway, Andy is sent to the Shawshank Prison for murdering his wife and her lover, although it's a crime he didn't actually commit, even though most of the evidence did point to it. Andy is, he's kind of an investment guy, finance lawyer, has spent a lot of his time up to that point in his life making as much money as he could, and he blames himself in part for his wife's fate due to the ways in which he drove her away from him, but he didn't kill her. Well, the prison is ruled over by a very sadistic warden who uses his religion to justify his wicked ways, including some of the really horrible things he lets his guards get away with. But over time, he comes to trust Andy. Comes to trust him enough, anyway, to have him handle his, the warden's, finances, including a money laundering and hiding scheme wherein Andy creates a phantom identity for the warden so he can squirrel away thousands upon thousands of dollars. The film's occasional narrator is a longtime prisoner called Red, really wonderfully played by Morgan Freeman. And he becomes Andy's closest friend over the 20 years that Andy spends in Shawshank. Through a scheme, though, that he works on for these 20 years, and you kind of have to see the movie to believe it, Andy escapes the prison one stormy night by crawling through its sewer system. And he is reborn, so to speak, out of the muck, let us call it, as a free man. He then uses the phantom identity he created for the warden to claim and create a new identity for himself, takes all the money, and splits to Mexico. But not before surreptitiously exposing the warden for the corrupt so-and-so that he was. Sometime later, Red is granted parole at his advancing age, and through a plan he and Andy had discussed while in prison, and which seemed like a hopeless pipe dream at the time, he joins Andy in Mexico, which is where the movie ends. Okay, if you've seen this film, then you know that I have barely scratched the surface of it, and I've even given away the ending to boot. The only caution, really, I would offer you in recommending it, if you haven't seen it, it does have some very brutal scenes in it from here and there. It's not something you get the kids together with to watch. So why is the word redemption used in the title of the movie, as well as in the Stephen King novel it's based on? Well, it works on several levels. Andy is able to redeem, in a way, the time he spent behind bars by fulfilling what seemed like a hopeless dream while on the inside. He becomes an agent of liberation, or a redeemer for Red. Through the good deeds that he does for some of the prisoners, where he puts his knowledge of financial things to work, the good deeds he does for some of the prisoners during his incarceration, he redeems, at least in some measure, the shabby way in which he had treated his wife, which could be argued set her up to be killed, even though Andy didn't do it. And there's a decidedly redemptive note in the way that the warden and the evil empire he created for himself are finally brought down due to the imaginative ways in which Andy had bided his time for 20 years. And so while this book and movie doesn't go the usual horror show route you generally get from Stephen King, it still has good overcoming evil at the end. Well, outside of the warden's rather perverse religiosity, which keeps popping up throughout this film, there's really nothing overtly religious about this movie. But it is a religious film, I would say, nonetheless. In fact, I was first introduced to it many years ago when it was used in my son's religion class back when he was going to Bishop Curtin High School. Until then, I figured it was just another Stephen King horror film. Well, as I hope to demonstrate, as we move on from here then, is that this theme of redemption, which, as I say, operates on several levels in this movie, is also found in one way or another, is an element in one way or another, in practically all of the major religions of the world. And when you can find a common theme in a wide range of religious faiths, what that tells me is that we are also dealing with a common and a very deep-seated human phenomenon as well. So let's just consider it on that for a few minutes. For literally, redemption means securing freedom by paying a price, as Andy Dufresne does. In earlier times, and tragically, still in some parts of the world today, redemption means buying someone out of slavery. The person doing the freedom pays an agreed upon price to the owner, and then the slave is free or redeemed. Of course, on a very much, much lighter note, and I'm going to date myself with this one, I'm sure, but does anybody remember green stamps? Or green stamps? All right, everybody who likes it, remember the age of 40, all these hands, everybody, I want a green stamp. Everybody thinks you got them in grocery stores. Whenever, for every 10 cents worth of groceries you buy, you get this green stamp. And you put them in these books. And when you accumulated enough books, you could turn the books in for some kind of, use like a kitchen appliance or something of that nature. All right, yeah, everybody said, yeah, I remember green stamps. And there were actually these green stamp stores where you'd take your books, which were currency, you could go and purchase, so to speak, whatever was there. And these stores, interestingly enough, were called redemption centers. I guess you redeemed all that money you spent on your groceries and all the time you spent there, and you got some little gadget you can take home with you, redemption center. Well, anyway, the most common use of the term, though, treats the word redemption as an act taken to correct or overcome and make up for a previous wrong. It could be a wrong you've committed or one that was done to you, but it's something to make a previous wrong right. If a player in a baseball game, for example, makes an error that results in a couple of runs being scored, but then later in the game gets the game-winning hit with a home run, the announcer will usually say something like, well, Jones certainly redeemed himself for that error he made back in the third inning. The player is released, so to speak, from the feelings of guilt or self-incrimination over costing his team a game, since he took it upon himself to see that the game was eventually won. So when I go to baseball games, you see, I'm not just going to a baseball game. I am engaging in religious study. I guess I should assure you, I don't push that to the point of writing off a Red Sox ticket as a professional expense. That's my case. On note, there is a pronounced element of redemption in the 12-step recovery program, whose objectives are to free persons from enslaving addiction or from self-defeating and self-destructive behaviors and ways of living. Some of you have been engaged in that. You know that one of the 12 steps calls for participants to make a list of persons they have wronged, or persons they may have made life painful or difficult for because of their behavior. And then the following step after the make a list is to call for that person who's making the list to seek out, if possible and if appropriate, to seek out the people they have wronged and try to find some way of making amends to them. This is basically a process of self-redemption, which also has the potential for bringing about some reconciliation with the person who has been wronged or hurt. Of course, you don't have to be dealing with an addiction to know that you have at times wronged someone, and you find yourself looking for ways that you can redeem that wrong. This is a process, I dare say, we've all had to engage in at certain times in our lives. Of all of their variations, one element found in many of these, one common element found in a number of these kinds of redemption, really has to do with being released or freed from a broken or a painful condition and then delivered into a more healed or whole one. And that's why, as I said earlier, it's a common theme found in many of the legends, many of the mythologies of many of the world's religious traditions. We'll just take a quick tour here for a minute. The idea of cultural sacrifices, going clear back to that, the Egyptians and the Romans made to their gods and goddesses were for the purpose, in some measure, of staying the anger of the gods and goddesses and assuring a plentiful harvest, a redemption, as it were, from the wrath of the gods, as they could show in floods and droughts and things such as that matter. The central legend in Judaism is that of Yahweh redeeming his people from slavery and delivering them into a promised land in return for their loyalty to and worship of him. In Buddhism, the goal is the attainment of enlightenment, which is the deliverance or redemption from the ongoing cycle of life and death. In Christianity, it is Jesus who takes upon himself the sins of humanity and redeems them by his death. And with respect to the latter, as I know I've said on various other occasions, it was really the idea of Jesus' death as an act of redemption that proved to be the major stumbling block for me in my continuing to embrace Christianity in any orthodox way. But I do believe our Unitarian and our Universalist forebears were much closer to the mark when they reinterpreted the idea of redemption in a Christian sense, to mean that by his life and teachings, Jesus demonstrated that there was a higher and more godly, if you will, self that we can aspire towards and that can call us away from our more fallen or broken selves. This is actually the point of a book I'm working my way through right now by Deepak Chopra. It's called The Third Jesus. Fascinating book. I'm saving it for my Palm Sunday sermon here in a couple of weeks. To keep it, though, in a more humanistic vein for now, I know I have my times, as I guess we all do, when I feel cut off or separated from the life I know I could be living and from the person I know I can be. I doubt there's a human being alive who hasn't known that state of personal alienation and frustration at times when we just, for whatever reason it is, feel we can't quite connect with our better or higher selves. And it's usually when we're in such a state as that, that some of our more regretful, some of our more hurtful behavior takes place. As I say, I'm guessing it's a universal phenomenon to feel out of sync with ourselves in our world at times. It's also a universal perception, I would say, to recognize that we do live, for all of its wonderful things, we also do live in a broken world that causes at times to look up and around and say, surely we can do better than this. Perhaps this is why the themes and the myths of redemption are practically universal in all the religions of the world. It's because we know that we are imperfect beings living in an imperfect world and calling us to greater levels of holiness. And so terms like, reflecting what I said a few minutes ago, terms like Redeemer or Messiah or Christ are not ones I use all that often, except when I get going in a sermon like this and talk about the value of myth and metaphor on our spiritual journeys. But a Redeemer or a Messiah, as I have come to understand it, is not someone who in one fell swoop reconfigures our lives and makes everything all right. Instead, it is a person. It could be any person. It could be you in relation to another person who alters in a positive way our sense of reality. Our redemptive moment occurs when we are made and brought to see ourselves in a new light, when we are enabled and brought to be seeing new possibilities, new dreams for ourselves, when we are delivered from the mundane. A Redeemer is one who shows us creative possibilities and creative ways of living that have been there all along, but allows us to see it for the first time. And it is in, among other places, the shadowy, largely hidden figure of Jesus of Nazareth that I see a model for such a person. A model. Someone whose most redemptive message to those who were really listening to him and those who really got it was when he said, "The kingdom of God is within you." Meaning, as I take it, the resources you need for meaningful living are within yourself if you can tap into them and bring them forth. Well, there's one more piece of territory I briefly want to touch on this theme of redemption before I close out. As Lori mentioned back during our announcement time at the beginning of our service, this month of March 2008 marks what I regard as a most tragic, painful anniversary. I even hesitate to call it an anniversary, but it is the fifth year after our country's invasion of Iraq. This will be just a short take today. For whether we leave that country in the next, militarily, in the next 100 days, or the next, 100 years, and it will be neither of those time spans, actually, I really think one of the many questions and issues before us will be, how do we redeem the lives lost, both American and Iraqi, in a war we did not have to fight? This is not the first time we've had to answer that question. That long black granite wall of Washington, D.C., with the names of nearly 60,000 American servicemen and women etched into it, one of them being a high school classmate of mine, is, among many other things, an attempt. And I believe it was a good attempt, is a good attempt, and a necessary attempt to redeem those lives that I feel were sacrificed on the altar of our hubris. It is a way of saying, very rightly and redemptively so, that these lives mattered, they counted, they were people who were loved and cared about, and they deserved to be remembered and respected as such, however misguided the policies were that cost them those lives. And for the past 5 years, thanks to what I take to be another misguided folly, we are also seeing lives lost. Lives on whose behalf we will be called upon in some fashion to offer that same redemptive message. These are lives that mattered. They were loved and cared about. They deserve to be respected and remembered as such. However misguided the policies were and are that result in the continued taking of those lives. We will elect a new president this fall. A lot of issues will be at stake. There are issues that people of concern and people of goodwill are going to have different opinions about. That is what democracy is about. It's about giving all of us a voice in our civic life. Among the many things that I will be bearing in mind when it comes time to cast my vote will be who I feel is best equipped and situated to at least partially redeem us from this folly of a war we have created for ourselves and for our standing in the world community. Well, to bring it back to those of us who gather here to worship on this morning. Among our many callings as persons who share a liberal religious faith is that of being a redeeming community. We are called here, this place, this time. We are called to create a special and a sacred place where lives can be transformed, where we can move from brokenness to wholeness, where we can both face our shortcomings and celebrate and live out the yet to be realized possibilities for our lives. And it's also a place where we can find ways, acting together, to be agents of redemption in a world so much in need of hope, so much in need of healing. Together, we will continue to make that so. And together,